there are always questions that even come up. There's still a question that comes up nowadays that the church as a whole had to make a judgment on so there would not be disunity. So the question comes up, should I eat unleavened bread every day? Am I commanded to do so? And when you go to the scripture, well, some of I really think we should. Well, you don't really have to. And then, is it a sin if you don't eat unleavened bread? What if you fast? And all of a sudden we find out there's this, what Christ called the straining of the gnat and swallowing the camel. So I'll tell you what I've done, just so there are no offenses. I had those matzos sitting right where that sin used to be. It was now wiped clean. The matzo box was right there. And every day or every morning or whenever I could, I tried to take a piece as a reflection on that. Now, am I all goody-two-shoes because I did that? No, that was my way of doing that, and I wouldn't dictate my way on anybody else. So, but what if you're off somewhere? What if you were on a cruise and you fell overboard and you were on some desert island and there were no matzos? Would you catch a fish, open it up, instead of the coin, there'd be a matzo? How would that be? And somebody brings out all these different scenarios. Are you serious that God is going to be so upset that on one day you either forgot or didn't have access to something? Are we missing the entire point on the spiritual element on what this is all about? Not to neglect the physical, as I said. We eat unleavened bread during the days of unleavened bread. Do you eat it every minute of the day, every hour of the day, every half day? We're missing the point if we don't examine the more spiritual element. It's the way that we think that has got to change. And those other elements, the physical elements, such as foot washing, which I love doing, but you could also analyze that. Is that really commanded? You could have a debate about that. Christ said, what I've done, you should do this also. Do what? Do the foot washing or have the attitude? So the church made a judgment a long time ago that we're going to do a foot washing. And so we have done that traditionally in the church of God. Is that so overwhelmingly important? What if you've got somebody that's got a foot, he's got no one to foot wash? Does he wash his own feet? I mean, if something is a sin, it's a sin, isn't it? But we get so caught up physically sometimes that we miss the point. And because I say that, someone could, well, no, he's just trying. No, I'm not. I love the foot washing. We'll always do the foot washing. I think it's a wonderful tradition of the church. But if you're going to get caught in an argument with some scholar, be very careful on that. I say that we do that as an important tradition in the church for the purpose. If we understand the spiritual intent, we are going to be happy. You're not just going to be happy if you wash feet. You're going to be happy if you understand the attitude of service behind it. That's the entire point. That's the thinking. So in point one in the sermon today, we must learn to think the way that God thinks. If you want to title it, Beyond Physical. Beyond the physical, where are we? We must learn to think the way that God thinks. And we're on a course right now because as Christ led the disciples, he was giving them an entire different way of thinking. Remember as he said it was recorded for us? It's been said this, but I say to you, the thinking. And all along the way as he addressed his disciples, you know, did they really get it? In fact, up to the very last point, Christ knew that they didn't get it because they were still talking about who was the greatest. So he used a physical example so he could put them in awe. I go, wait a second, you're my master. Peter's going, you don't wash feet. Christ said, you don't get the point. Oh, well, let me wash your entire body then. See? Physical. You missed the point. Says Peter, three times he said, feed my sheep, feed my lambs, feed my sheep. I want you to get the thinking this is beyond physical. Once we think the spiritual, all the physical things will fall in line and we'll even be happier for it because we understand the attitude. We must learn to think the way that God thinks. It's called the mind of Christ. 1 Corinthians chapter 2, verse 14. And here's what's so interesting is a reflection about this. I understand, and we can see, and I've got the differentiation, by the way, at least in my life, that some may not have here. Because if you were born into the truth, it's a little bit different, first and second generation Christian. Because for 14 years, I didn't do what I'm doing now. And there was a definite differentiation in days that you kept and what you ate. Physical, a lot of physical things. And then the next step was an entire way of thinking. The whole process, which we're still engaged in now, in a whole different way of thought and thinking. And so when I look out there, I don't judge the world because God's not judging the world. Now, I'll judge issues and I'll judge things. I'll learn to look at the way that Christ looks at it and think the way he thinks about that. That's not right. That's not right. Obviously, it's not good to do that. Obviously, it's not right to say that. How do I know? Because I compare it to Scripture. But I don't judge them because I learned too. I had to learn to differentiate. You don't curse. You don't eat unclean food. Those are pretty hard on physical things that were changeable, but the mindset had to change. And so the thought process came in, and that's why I've shared that with you on even the mindset. Why does someone swear in the first place? Why do we even go that direction? Why, when you hit your thumb with a hammer, would a curse word come out? Why isn't just, ow? Why is that not good enough? Fudge isn't good enough. Charlie Brown, what did he say? Anybody remember the cartoon? Whenever something would go wrong in his life, he'd say rats. It'd be rats. Or some people say bats. Why? Why is it that gives some kind of emphasis, or does it take away any pain? I find the same pain, no matter what you say, it hurts the same. For some reason, our expressions tend to, it's like, well, that kind of really, that really shows somebody about the way that I feel about something. So therefore, as I was a child, and you are going to promise something, you don't no longer swear on a Bible. I swear on a stack of Bibles. Oh, man, now I know that you must be meaning it. How many are there? 6 or 7. Well, I'm doing 10. Well, they ain't nothing. I swore on 20 of them. Really? And now we bring it all back to the simplicity that Christ taught, which we are in this direction of teaching people in the kingdom. It's going to be yes or no. It's going to be the handshake and agreement with no contracts. What a time that we really have to look forward to. And when somebody actually trips, stumbles, stubs their toe, we'll be there to teach them. Hang on there. I'm going to tell you something. I've tried this. I've actually tried it. And it kind of works pretty good. If I stub my toe, I'll do a little dance. It works pretty good. Ooh, ee, ooh. Ouch. Try it. It sounds silly, but it's sillier and worse to let a curse word isn't there. So if you've got to do something, give something else a shot. You know, you could do a song about it. Oh, I'm such an idiot. I hit my, you know, whatever it might be. It was my fault. I'm the one that did it. But doesn't that start up here in the way that we think about why we do certain things? And so we take these times that God gives to us, not just in thinking about why we hit our thumbs, but why we're doing all this in the first place. 1 Corinthians 2, verse 14 says, "The natural man receives not the things of the Spirit of God, for their foolishness to him." How do I know that? Look right out on Campbell Station Road, on the freeway, going here. People are going about business today. This is nothing to them. This is critical, salvational, eternal stuff that we're doing today. Why doesn't everybody get this? We know that. We understand that. Don't take that for granted. We are here because of what God's given to us in a course direction that He's given to us that's eternal, not temporary. And I can say that and be reminded of it when my daughter just turned 27, because I just used to be 27. Don't tell me that I'm 59. I'm not. I don't think I am. 716. This June, it'll be 59. It goes by quick. I can hardly remember my children's ages. I know their birth dates. That's what helps me than I do the math. Because the years go by so quick, you're going, what is it now? What is it now? It just goes by so fast. But if you realize that, I realize 27, double that, 54, add another 27 onto that. I may make that, but I'm not probably won't get a fourth 27. That's the reality. You know, I could leave here today and go, man, I'm not going to get a fourth 27. I already passed two of them. No, into my third 27. That's fast. Life is temporary. And see, some of the older ones are going, you ain't seen nothing yet. And they're the ones that, when you're here, give you the hope, because they're still here. They get it. They've been on this course, and they've still endured it. So it tells me it's you can do this. It's possible to do this, even through all everyone goes through. But the rest don't get this. It says, neither can he understand it, because they're spiritually discerned. And for those that have tried that, we've tried it. We've tried to give people the truth on a platter with nice little pieces of spiritual parsley to even make it look good. And if God's not calling, it doesn't work. Verse 15, it says, but he that is spiritual judges. Now, this is the same word as discerned up above. He that is spiritual discerns all things, yet he himself is judged of no man. No one judges me. That's a pretty good feeling. It's none of their business what I do or what my calling is. My calling and your calling is between you and Jesus Christ and God the Father. No one else can judge you for that. That's what you see, that's what you discern, that's what you perceive, and all this is very personal. It's a very personal relationship. Verse 16, for who has known the mind of the Lord, that he may instruct him? But we have the mind of Christ. We have got that begettal, that little piece of begettal of God's Spirit that gives us the ability to understand these bits and pieces as we go forward, larger bits and pieces as we continue to grow and continue to learn and take on that as a part of God. And what will we be like? Because, you know, Jesus Christ had the fullness of God's Spirit from birth. And yet some just want to bring him down to a human level sometimes. Well, you know, I don't know if we could have lost all this. You know, this would have been a game changer if Christ would have just caved. He wasn't going to cave. It wasn't going to happen. Are you saying that there was a guarantee? Absolutely. He was foreordained from the foundation of the world. Man blew it, but Christ came into the world that he would not do that. Did he have a physical body? Did he hurt? Did he suffer? All those things, yes. Did he look at sin and go, oh, I don't know. I don't know. Why did he fast 40 days and 40 nights? Because he set an example for us. Why did he get baptized? Because he never sinned. As an example for us. Why was he circumcised? If the new covenant was on the scene. It was all an example. It's physical stuff that we're supposed to get the spiritual element from and not get caught up in physical. Just like when we become God, you and I won't want to sin. Why? Because you'll see the suffering that it brought, and you won't even have a desire for it. You think I have got a desire? You think somebody can tempt me with a cigarette? No, others may be, and have different temptations along the way. What I've seen that do sickens me so much, I wish I could stop all the manufacturing of it. It produces sickness and death. It smells pretty good, though. Isn't that interesting? It's a tobacco leaf. Did you ever go through a forest? I love the smell of a forest fire or burning wood, something like that. That's all it is burning leaves. So sometimes, I don't like to go into a room where you're filled with it and you walk out and you just stink like crazy. But it's interesting how, hey, smells good. And just like the woman I saw in the commercial, she said, you know, when I was in high school, I thought it was cool to do this. I just saw it played one after another this past week. And she was attached to a tube, and she said, you know, you can only go as far as this oxygen tube allows you to go. She had lung surgery, and there was a warning out that don't go that way. But, you know, for her, she even said, it looked like something that people would look at you go, that's cool. Maybe some here have experienced that. I never went that direction, but I saw plenty of those I went to high school with that went into the bathroom, they smoked, and now it became habitual, it became more than cool. It was a habit that eventually killed a lot and brought death and destruction. Oh, what about this? He lived to 100 years old. You know, you reason all you want. That's called human logic and human reasoning. It's not good and it won't be there in the kingdom. That I can know for sure. And so there are other elements of these things that we all have to face in so many different ways, don't we? So as we have so-called come out of sin, have we really? Have you and I stopped sinning? Is that going to be a guarantee? See, Jesus Christ said, be you of good cheer, for I've overcome. And it's through Jesus Christ and our repentance before Him this becomes this process, that we're on this path, and the more that we think like Him, the less that we'll sin. And yet none of us really has that guarantee that we won't. But I know once we become a part of that God family, we won't sin anymore either. How do I know that? I see the example of Jesus Christ. We're going to be given the fullness of God's Spirit. We're going to be like God. We will have an existence that started unlike them. God will always be greater. The Father will always be greater than Jesus Christ. But we're called His elder brother. We're going to inherit all things with our elder brother. And we're going to become God, with different appearances. And there are those things that are very interesting and fun to talk about. How wonderful it's going to be. This is called having the mind of Christ. You know, Romans chapter 8 points out something about God's Spirit here that we're really trying to avoid. Paul was on the scene here, and God took him through a little bit of a different process than He took the disciples. He was trained for 3 years specifically by Jesus Christ in the wilderness. And he pointed out some interesting things here in Romans 8. He says, verse 5 in Romans 8, for those who live according to the flesh set their minds on the things of the flesh, but those who live according to the Spirit, the things of the Spirit. For to be carnally minded is death. You see, it's carnally minded. It's the way that we think carnally. But to be spiritually minded, so here's what our focus is. When we leave here today, if we can remember this, that for the rest of your existence and life, if this could be implanted in a better way, with more emphasis on it, that we're going to try to be more spiritually minded. And that's not always an easy thing, but if we can take these times to stop and to pause. You know, Isaiah 55 points out, for as heaven is high as the earth, so are my ways above your ways, my laws above your laws. Can we think that way? Yes. I mean, whatever level we're there, here's the carnal-minded world, wherever we are above that, because we're here today at least understanding this, we understand basic elements of God's law, which we realize produce peace and happiness, and we don't even understand maybe the totality of that. Because after doing the foot washing, are you happy? He says, happy are you if you do these things after the foot washing. And if we're not happy, I mean overall happy and joyful people, because that's a reflection of the Spirit of God, then we better stop and think, why? Why is it? And that's for you to do personally, as it is for me. What is it that's stopping you? It's nobody else's fault. There's an automatic reaction to obeying God's laws and taking on those virtues. It produces happiness. And so I like to even stop during the foot washing, because I noticed for years when I was coming to do a foot washing, everybody was kind of almost forlorn. And not that we want to be throwing a party and dancing like John Travolta, but on the other hand, there's something that's supposed to be good about that. That I always knew that when I got my foot washed, it's always interesting when I'm thinking, okay, what's the temperature here going to be? Are we going to have some kind of wise guy deacon that put ice cubes in it? But even if it's really cold, I know after it's all dried, did your feet ever feel really tingly? Well, no, you know, see that on the physical aspect, people, you really want to talk about that. It's kind of a private matter. No, it's not. It's okay for your feet to tingle and to feel good. And there's nothing wrong with that. The question may come up. By the way, am I supposed to enjoy the foot washing? Well, yeah. Why not? And as I mentioned, how far do we take it? Do we really take it to the example of, let's really do this, let's really bring in the point, so before you come in, we're going to have basins filled with mud that you step in first. No clean feet that come into the foot washing. We're going to really set the tone for this. This is one that's going to really put us over the top this year. Boy, that Knoxville church, they all came in, their foot were mud. They had to really just take pieces off first and then really get in there and really do some, take brushes and scrub them. We don't go to those levels, do we? But sometimes, again, reflecting on it, we can get a better picture. By the way, you can enjoy it. I've saw one give a hug to the other person. Wow, that's okay. Passover the same way. It's very somber, and it should be. Not to take away anything, but don't forget, I also said, by the way, on the really happy, positive side, it shows the reflection of God's love for us. So it's one of the most mixed emotional meetings that you'll ever come to. And no, we don't come to there with congregational talking. It is more of a serious time because of how personal that it is. But that we don't have to kind of be so closed in. It's okay to understand what this moment means and how important it means. I don't want to ever forget that. So we can think the way that God thinks. You know, 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 9 speaks of our calling and what we are. For you're a royal priesthood. You're a chosen generation. But what? Do you remember what it says after that? That you may reflect the virtues, that you may reflect His glory. And all those virtues are laid out here. Are you a person that reflects joy, kindness, gentleness? You know, there's over 100 virtues that you can find of which God is, that encapsulate that. And so we all have work to do. We all have work to do when it comes to those type of traits, of the ones that we come through, sincerity and of truth. Are we always speakers of truth? And not on the edge, well, I don't know about this. Well, let me be honest with you. Use words like that. Just speak the truth. So it's thinking the way that God thinks. That's a big, big area of what to do with thinking the way God thinks. So we stop today so we can think, what's His whole purpose here today, the last day of unleavened bread? So it's the last day. Can I eat matzos tomorrow? You can eat matzos throughout the rest of the year if you want. It's just got a picture during these days. Now, if you can think foot washing the rest of the year, that's what we're supposed to do. Not do the foot washing, but think foot washing, think service, and then am I happy? A constant reflection on that is going to do nothing but good for a Christian on your travels to that promised land. The second point. The first point is we must learn to think the way that God thinks. The second one is learn to use the pause or stop button effectively. Learn to use the pause or stop button effectively. You know, there was a song that was sung, part of the lyrics. say, stop the world and let me off. I'm tired of going round and round. I've played the game of love and loss, so stop the world and let me off. Some of you might have said that before. Stop this world and just let me off of it, by Waylon Jennings. It's a whole different meaning in his song. It's the way that this world learns about love, which is a total faulty concept. You can see it on TV programs. Years ago, you could see, I still remember programs. The whole focus on the one program is somebody started out with a lie. It happened in I Love Lucy, by the way, if you remember. Lucy or Desi told a fib, a lie. We had learned to call it a fib after that. The fib was lesser of a lie. God would say, no, they're the same. Mankind's human thinking, call it a fib. Now they call it today. Now they've actually stepped up from fib. Do you know what they say today? Anybody remember what they say in place of a lie? I misspoke. That's more politically. I misspoke. Oh, he misspoke. Because you don't want to say a lie. One and the same. That's the way the world thinks. From the very beginning, God made the Sabbath day with this in mind, to stop during the week. He also made the holy days for the express purpose in helping us to take the time to understand what He is doing. See, the Passover, if we just go back for a minute, the Passover for the Israelites was that they selected an unblemished yearling. Do you all remember what that was? By the way, here we get physically again. Because they could take from the sheep or the goats. Well, that's got to be a mistranslation in there. That can't be right, because he was known as the Lamb of God. It couldn't be goats. No, there were actually goat herders then. That's what they had, goats. They didn't do sheep. So God said, you can take a goat as long as it's a yearling. And that was okay. That was the instruction that was given. But they took it on what day? Do you remember? Passover is on the 14th, beginning the 14th. The lamb, unblemished lamb or goat, was selected on the 10th. Why the 10th? I know exactly why. Do you? Because God said. See, parents have used that one before. How come, Mom and Dad? Because I said. There are some things you really don't need an excuse for. Now I can guess beyond that why, but why not the 11th or 12th? I'm not sure that why. Was it 10 because he said 10, 10 commandments? That sounds good, the 10th. I'm not sure on that. All I know is, guess what would happen if you did the 10th? Could you imagine Old Testament time, you take the yearling out, and now you've got kids. Dad, how come you're doing that? Let me tell you why. You see, because it was so important, there is something that we do naturally in preparation for what we do. So again, I've called it the consolidating of the sin. On your tabletops or whatever it might be, and I don't think that everybody does that, but I found out quite a lot of people do that before the days of unleavened bread. You consolidate. You want it right there, so when that time comes up, it's all out of there, but you can nibble on it until... You can at least not throw it out and waste it. But then whatever is left before that evening starts of the 15th, then you throw it out. And that's normally the last thing that people take out traditionally in the church. Not everybody that way, but quite a few do. So here was the 10th, and what a teaching tool that this would be. Yeah, son or my daughter, come on with me because we're going to look through the flocks. What if it was, you know, hundreds upon hundreds or thousands? And if you really meant this and you were trying to do it according to the instruction, I'm going to go out. We're going to look for the best one we've got, the unblemished goat or unblemished sheep. What a lesson that you're teaching your children all about in leading up to those days. So there was a preparation that God used in doing this. The seriousness of preparation in advance. It was killed in the evening that began the 14th. The blood was put on the upper and side posts of the houses. That was critical because somebody died if you didn't. The firstborn would die if you didn't have that done. Pretty critical. The lamb or goat was prepared and eaten according to the instruction given. God and the destroyer, if you remember, sometimes those quizzes come on, what came over? Well, Jesus Christ said, I will pass over the land, and he would do it, and also the destroyer would pass over because the destroyer would kill anyone on whom the blood wasn't on the doorpost and the mantle or the upper post. So how that really went about, that's the instruction, that's the information that we're given. So we can see a lot that took place that night. And then what some didn't realize, the more that you maybe have looked into it, the more recognition that you've given of what it took to get all of those Israelites from one place, or all the places that they were scattered. There were those in Goshen, there were those that surrounded in different places throughout Egypt. And they all had to gather, and they came out on the 15th. How that could be done in a couple of hours, somebody's thinking taxis and buses in our time today, and they didn't have that. There were over 1 million people that came out with horses and with cows and with sheep and with all kinds of things, and this was it for them. Yes, they had time because Ramses said yes, then he said no, we're ready, we're not ready, can you tell us what's going on? And they didn't have texts. Hey, this is what's going on. Right now, everybody knows what's going on just like that because you can text it. They didn't have texts. You know what they had back then? Trumpets, signal horns. So Moses didn't go, all right, Manasseh over there, Ephraim over there. There had to be a coordinated way of getting everybody together. Do you think that could be done in a couple hours? That was a massive undertaking for people to come out of Egypt. So you had the whole 14th, the whole day after the lamb, and you couldn't come out of your houses. That whole day, people gathering just to leave to get to Ramses to come out of Egypt on the 15th. And then God provides, which I see all the time. I look up there. There it is. Full moon. Because you're going to get a full moon for about 3 days, sometimes 4 days. So some that want to get nitpicky with physical things again and miss the entire point. And what took place, standing back and looking at the big picture? Don't lose sight of that. We stop and we think about this. See, in the New Testament, for over 1,400 years, on and off, because they'd been taken into captivity, would be allowed to return, then they would keep it again, then be taken into captivity due to the dispersions. The Jews had been keeping the Passover over 1,400 years. Jesus Christ, for the first time ever, had now shown the disciples something different, the establishment of the symbols of the bread and the wine. You think that didn't cause some questions and some pause to go, whoa, wait a second here, what's going on? Now, Christ did all the preparations, go prepare the room, get the Passover lamb. All that was done according to the tradition. Now something's changed. Because, see, for the first time ever, the real thing is there to die. Everything that pictured was there. It's done, over with. In our time here, we look at it as a memorial. And where we're very sobered by it, and you wonder sometimes if Christ sitting on that throne remembers that pain. But you know something? For him, there's joy because that's over with, that's done. And I could reflect on her, and maybe, I don't want to bring back painful experiences for the woman, but remember childbirth. That had to hurt. But when your child is into the world, just as you said, wow, what a blessing it is. It's got to be that way because so many have more than one child. So if it was that bad, you're going, that's done with, that's over, that's not happening again. But in many cases, you'll have another one and another one. See, pain is that temporary moment that we forget about sometimes. But for the first time ever, you have the establishment of the bread and the wine. So let's go back to Matthew chapter 26 so we don't forget this so quickly. We said it. We said it once at Passover. But this is critical. And a reflection and a remembrance of what we just came through. I don't want to forget it so quickly because of such a special moment that it was. And you know, when it's such a special moment, you'll normally remember the people that you're around at the time too. Because you're doing it as a family together in such sobriety and such seriousness and such gratefulness and thanksgiving. Matthew chapter 26, verse 26, as they were eating, Christ took bread, blessed it, broke it, gave it to the disciples, and said, "Take, eat, this is my body." No, it wasn't. Was it really his body? So through the years, you had actually people that think transubstantiation, that it's actually the real body. You missed the spiritually minded again. This is taking on what he said. When you go back to all the scriptures that talk about that, when we eat of that, we're taking on the symbolism of Christ's life. And at Passover, it's different because that symbolizes his broken body. He took the cup and gave thanks and says, "Drink you all of it." Now, by the way, we do it different. If we did it exactly the way it was done, we'd have one cup and we'd pass it around. Not everybody would like that nowadays. You know, they weren't so concerned with germs at the time. I even thankfully remembered my little thing of cans, germ things, whatever it's called. I can't remember exactly what that's called. So just because after you wash the feet, here I'm breaking bread. So I've got that. Hey, everybody, I'm washing hands, so take that element out of it. It's going to be okay, hopefully. You do the best that you can anyway. But they had one cup and passed it around. We have these little ones. Who says? Who made the determination on that? Somebody didn't follow the rules. You see, if we think so physical, now we're going to miss the point, aren't we? So once again, a judgment was made in the church a long time ago. This is how we're going to observe it according to what Christ said to do. He says, "For this is my blood of the new covenant, which is shed for many for the remission of their sins." And then you see the example in John 13, verse 12, where it says, "So after he washed their feet, he took his garment, sat down." He says, "Do you understand what I have done to you?" And so we ask the same thing for the communion as well. Do you understand? Do we really understand? Because it was important that they would get this. The fulfillment of all the prophecies of the Old Testament regarding the coming of the Messiah was now being wrapped up. There were so many things of which Christ was dealing with, was teaching his disciples. And all those things that were pointed out in the law and the prophets were coming to pass. Some of them, again, for the future, but the ones pointed to the Messiah and all the things that he were doing, I mean, it's incredible that all these things took place. That's one of the things of the proof of Jesus Christ, is that you had all these prophecies saying these things were going to take place, and exactly was done the way it was said thousands of years ago. Luke chapter 22 and verse 28. So look what Christ said to them in teaching them this. And this is something for our joy on this day as we hit that pause or stop button, to think about this whole purpose and what God is doing for us. This is where you can get excited. Because see, we don't have to do it like the Israelites do. I don't want to think like that. Maybe that can be our prayer. Please help us not to think like that. Please help us not to think like the way of this world. And not saying, please don't help me to think like that other person. How about this? Help me to think the way that you think. That exceeds all of that. Please help me to think the way that you and Jesus Christ, because I know I'll be on the right path if I'm doing that. Luke 22, verse 28, "You are those who have continued with me in my trials." And as I look out again on the congregation, he could be saying the same thing to you. Because there's no one here that has not experienced trials in their life of a Christian. So he could be saying the same exact thing to you now. "You are those that have continued with me in my trials, and I appoint to you a kingdom, as my Father has appointed me." And so we know, as I mentioned in 1 Peter 2, you are called chosen. We're going to have positions and responsibilities as well of service. "That you may eat and drink at my table in my kingdom, and sit on the thrones judging the 12 tribes of Israel." So here we know this. We may not know everything, but there's some specifics that God's given us to understand. One thing we know is David's going to be king over Israel, physical Israel. There's going to be 12 tribes, not the tribe of Dan for whatever reason. They did something wrong that disqualified them. So you'll have 12 tribes because it includes, instead of Joseph, Ephraim and Manasseh. And David will be king over these tribes. How God will pull physical 12 tribes together? God is God. He can do it. David's going to be king over them, and that each of the apostles will be over one of the tribes. How is that interaction between the apostles of the new covenant and David under the, how is that going to all work together? It's going to work beautifully. That's the way that God designed it to be. But it's going to be, then where do we fit in? We don't know all that yet, but we do know this. That's what Jesus Christ said. And it will be fulfilled as sure as the prophecies that had to do with Jesus Christ were fulfilled. This will be done. And so he said, Lord, the Lord said, Simon, Simon, behold, Satan desires you that he may sift you as wheat. Do you think he doesn't say the same for us today? See, all the things bring it up to today, because if you remember in John 17, his prayer to his Father included us. He said, I don't only pray for you, I pray for those who will continue in my word. That's you and I. He was praying for you and I at this time right now. And you think Satan doesn't desire to sift us as wheat? He's already done a lot of sifting. This is why we have to be so much more spiritually minded, because as these times gets closer, the intensity peaks up, and most of us can see that. You know, those who are spiritually minded, you can just sense it. You can see more and more that this is not the world that you and I want to live in. We see the pain and suffering that's taking place, and the blasphemy, and all the wrong things that are being done. So he says, but I prayed for you that your faith does not fail, and when you are converted, strengthen the brethren. There's something there that said they weren't yet converted. When did the conversion take place? Well, they had to receive the Holy Spirit to start that process, because without the Spirit, they couldn't be spiritually minded, and they were still thinking carnally. Because Peter's the one that said, I'll lay down my life for you. Christ said, he was so patient and so loving. Peter, I'm telling you, that's not going to happen yet. You're still physically minded. So he says, I pray for you, when you are converted, strengthen the brethren. Is that what he did? Yes, it is. All of them, when they received God's Spirit, strengthened the brethren. And they did lay their lives down for the brethren. And that's what God expects his people to have, that mentality now in the same way. So from all the accounts that we read, they were converted, they understood, and they loved and strengthened the brethren to their death. 1 Corinthians chapter 11, let's reflect on this once again. So see, something, what I'm showing here is after a long time, something had been changed that we may take for granted sometimes. A lot of physical things had changed. Because you know what people maybe that you know are doing? I've seen this within the church of God. All these physical things become so important again. And what I've watched it, in every case I've seen it, to where you get around the Passover and some people want to start to become Jewish minded. I'm not putting down the Jews. I'm just saying there's a reflection, and we had Jewish friends and find out why Jews do what they do. And they do it traditionally. I ask a Jewish friend, why do you eat unleavened bread during the days of unleavened bread? Because our forefathers baked unleavened cakes when they came out of Egypt. That was it. I don't judge him. But that's why they do it. So all of a sudden, people of God start to become physically minded and start preparing the lamb and the unleavened bread and the herbs and all these splendors on the Passover to have this very special dinner. Am I putting down, do you want to have lamb for it's that's great with a traditional memory. But you don't have to do that. In fact, he was saying, by the way, this has changed now. Peter was saying, or Paul was saying here, this is, look, Christ gave the differentiation here. So he said in verse 20 of 1 Corinthians 11, when you come together to one place, this is not to eat the Lord's Supper. Because what was happening is people were taking those physical elements and actually getting drunk and actually going to people's house that maybe had a little bit more money and saying, we're going to leave them out because here this is our brotherhood here. We're the ones that got more money. You come on over here, and whatever they want to do, leave them over there. It was so carnal and such a critical thing. So look what it became in verse 21. For in eating, everyone takes before before the other his own supper. And one goes hungry, you don't look out for somebody else. And another is drunk. That could happen, for instance, on the night to be observed with people. We take a traditional thing that we've done, and we come together to have a nice meal and some wine sometimes. Do you think that people haven't done excess in the church in the past with wine and other things? They certainly have. So it's a carnal thing that can happen with physical things. And God says, I want you to do this and not miss the point on why we're doing this. Because as I pointed out, it's a heavier time that we go through with more physical things that we do. So some would say, well, you know, here's the night to be observed, and wow, then, you know, so the church has made judgments on that, so we don't have two services the next day. You know, through the years, I think we've made some pretty positive changes, because there are people here that remember during the Feast of Tabernacles, every day, two services. And I look back and go, how did you all do this? And you know what happened? You said, you did it. That's just what you did. Didn't complain. You thirsted for God's word. You were there with God's people, and that's what you did. But we stopped and took a look at this and go, how do we make this? Because can you actually get something through to people when they're kind of, you know, falling asleep and not really absorbing because they're so exhausted and tired? So we have a night to be observed, and then you get the morning off. So hopefully we can come together on a holy day, still establish a service, and kind of get the entire meeting and still get the enjoyment. Is it still hard and a lot of work? Yes, it is. But it was hard and a lot of work for the Israelites of old. That's a good memory to have. It wasn't easy for them to come out of Egypt with a high hand on the 15th when they were traveling and all the kids and all the cattle and all the goats and all that trying to come out. And when did they go to sleep? When did they take a nap? You know, maybe through that evening they were sleeping on and off as they awaited to leave, but it was a very difficult time. So we're pretty spoiled when it comes to that in a way. So again, getting the spiritual point here. He says in verse 22, what? Do you not have houses to eat in and to drink in? Or do you despise the church of God and shame them that don't have? Because again, there were poor people that didn't have that were being neglected. What should I say? Shall I praise you in this? Do you think you're doing God's service because you're getting together with your nice lamb and wine when others are being neglected, and then you're getting drunk too? He says, I praise you not. For I have received of the Lord, this is Paul talking, he received of God the same instructions that Christ gave to his disciples. That night which I delivered to you, that the Lord Jesus, in the night which he betrayed, took bread, when he gave thanks, he broke it and said, take, eat, this is my body, which is broken for you, this do in remembrance of me. Now, you'll find that in Luke's account. Matthew's account doesn't say that. But it says, this do in remembrance of me. So you've got to put the rest of the scriptures together. This do in remembrance. We do it today in remembrance of what he went through. After the same manner, he took the cup, verse 25, when he supped, saying, this is the cup of the new covenant in my blood. This do as often as you drink it. How often do we do it? Once a year. There are others that do it every week because they took as often. Oh, that we can do it all the time then. No, once again, we stopped back, looked at what the intent was. Once a year at Passover, we do this. We don't do it every week, every 2 weeks. When I was a Lutheran, and I was confirmed Lutheran, we did it like every month or twice a month, something to that nature. So we understood, we took the communion, but missed the entire point. It was just something physical that you did to be a part of the church community. This is something that's got to have more to do than that for each and every one of us individually. Verse 26, for as often as you eat this bread and drink this cup, you acknowledge the Lord's death till he returns. Wherefore, whoever will eat this bread and drink of the cup of the Lord irreverently or unworthily will be guilty of the body and blood of the Lord. So let a man examine himself and eat of that bread and drink of that cup, and that's what we've done. For he who eats and drinks irreverently eats and drinks damnation for himself, not discerning or not understanding the Lord's sacrifice. That's, by the way, one of the reasons for you to explain to somebody why people that haven't become baptized do not take of the bread and the wine. Because if you've not examined yourself and you don't understand what you're doing, you're guilty, and I become guilty because I'm the one administering that. It's incredibly important to understand that. You couldn't become a part of Israel unless you were circumcised. You had to think about what you were doing. That circumcision was now changed in the New Testament. but the same application is still there. For someone to take that is so serious because it's beyond something physical that we do. It defines our relationship and our understanding of what we're doing in the first place as Christians. And so it says, for this cause many are weak and sickly among you, many have sleep, and many have. Many have died, many have slept. They've fallen asleep in the church of God because they haven't taken that seriously. All of a sudden they thought, well, all the laws are done away with. Now we can keep Christmas. Now we can go back to doing this. Now they're the ones wandering. They're going to wander as opposed to those that are on the direction to the promised land. God's allowed the same thing to happen. But you know, the focus goes back on that's happened. That's going to happen. It tells me it's possible for people to let go and to forget about all this. The serious goes in there about our calling and staying close to God, using these holy days and Sabbath days effectively to stop. Verse 31 says, if we would judge ourselves, we would not be judged. But when we're judged by God, we're chastened of the Lord that we should not be condemned by the world. So therefore, God allows us to go through trials because he gives us course corrections along the way. That's for us to think about on a personal level. So wherefore, my brethren, when you come together to eat, wait for each other. And if any man hunger, let him eat at home, that you not come together to judgment. The rest I'll set in order when I come. So there are other issues that he had to deal with, obviously. Don't forget, by the way, this was a massive change. You don't have to be circumcised anymore. You know, all these things had changed. These were big, big changes, and you had to have a spiritual mindset to understand why all these things were taking place. So their jobs, the apostles now were sent out to reaffirm and reassure what Christ had now taught them, what needed to be done. Ourselves, we must continue to grow in the areas of prayer and meditation and fasting and Bible study. We may pray, we may know about prayer. But are you and I skilled in effective prayer? And we'll have messages about these things throughout the entire year. Are you at that point where your prayer life is so good that it's actually effective? No, James 5 says that, doesn't it? It says the effectual prayer of a righteous person avails much. Shows you got to be righteous. How can you be righteous if you're in sin? Well, how do you come out of sin? You get on your knees and you ask God for forgiveness. Don't do that until you've asked for forgiveness. Don't ask for somebody to be God to intervene or to do something if you're still in sin. It's almost like we've got the example of the Old Testament. Before the priest could even go offer an offering during the Day of Atonement, he had to offer one for himself. You had to become without spot first. Before I can serve anyone, before I use the same example, before I anoint, before I'm on my knees asking God, forgive me for anything I have done for me to be blemished through Jesus Christ. And I take that confidence on that I'm serious about that. He's forgiven me, and now I can ask the blessing or intervention for God on someone else. He says, don't bring some kind of offering until you've fixed your problem with your brother. There are a lot of examples that are in there. Don't come to me when you've got, don't be asking me when I told you, set your own house in order first. Now you can come to me. You can come to me now with more peace, with happiness, with the assurity to know that that sacrifice is good throughout the entire year, not just Passover. So 1 Peter 4, verse 7, he said, and Peter said, the end of all things is at hand. Be you therefore sober and watch unto prayer. Wow, when I see the things that are happening in our country, does it not help you to get on your knees and go, God, be merciful to us. We are in trouble. When I see the conflicts and I really see no hope as far as real righteous leadership in this country, I see a lot of physical things. I don't see anything that has to do with God. I see that being constantly tossed out more and more because you've got a nation that's not even educated. That, you know, you get this guy that goes around asking people questions, and you can see we are so ignorant, even on physical things. People don't even know who our vice president is. None of our history. And so we're going to be repeating the same mistakes because our young people haven't been taught what we went through and how we got here and what our founding fathers intended in the first place. And they were far from perfect. But at least they acknowledge God and they acknowledge the authority of the Bible, something that even they didn't understand in total. But at least there was an acknowledgement there. We are really in trouble. So you can see Christ's example of prayer in John 17, effective prayer. The third point, the last point here today, is expect big changes. Expect big changes. Look at the changes that God's people have experienced throughout the years. Early on in the Old Testament, they took the Passover lamb and ate it. The evening beginning the 14th, they took a yearling, killed it, and ate it in that evening. The yearling ate the Passover with his disciples on the evening beginning the 14th. That one that was the example of that one back in the Old Testament, the one chosen, now came that much. I mean, look at it from his mind. Look at it from God. All that time had gone by, and through all the dispersion, now he comes up. And now all these things are coming to pass. Do you think in one sense that he wasn't excited about that? Despite the pain and suffering, I mean, it was there. There's no doubt about it. It's reflected right in the writings. I mean, he was on his knees beseeching his God. It shows an example, once again, of what we can do because he was a human being. And he knew he was going to be beaten beyond recognition. He's the only one that would know what he was exactly going to go through. Not a bone would be broken. He knew that. People here have had broken limbs. It's painful, isn't it? Well, there's no one that's given an example. Even Mel Gibson, his portrayal in The Passion, says he underdid it because you could still recognize him. This figure was disfigured. You can even recognize what he looked like. He knew pain, and yet he also created the human body. And the human body had its mechanisms that God has made within it. It doesn't take away from pain and suffering at all. But you know we've got a Savior that understands what pain is beyond belief. And there came a time when his body couldn't do anymore. And so what happened was what he made from the beginning. It shut down. And he died. For the first time in his existence, can you imagine that? He was, as some people would call it, dead as a doornail. For 3 days, he ceased to exist. And if his Father didn't resurrect him, it wouldn't have been there. Only you and I really truly understand the depth of that, because some people feel why he was dead. He went and preached to the spirits in prison and something was going on with the spirit there that was still alive. No, he was dead, and it says the dead know nothing, and he was one of those dead for 3 days. He also lived to about 31 years old. So, you know, he never went past his prime. He was never married. So there are things that he didn't have to experience. He never saw old age. But he still understands the way the body works. He then fulfilled the entirety of that symbolism that existed for thousands of years on the 14th. And to this day, people debate the 14th and 15th, and it just blows your mind to see. Well, I think it's over here, physical, once again, physical things. It says Passover is on the 14th. All those things transpired in the old and in the new on the 14th. The entirety of what he went through in the New Testament was on the 14th. From the time that he prayed that night, took the Passover, that was on the 14th. When he became the Passover was on the 14th. When he died was on the 14th. It was all on the 14th. In the Old Testament, it was all on the 14th. And when they left and came out, it was an entire different symbolism pictured by that first day of unleavened bread. And this symbolism now, then you get the wave sheaf. Then you got this last day. kind of the signification of the wrap-up of this entire week to give us a reflection on why we do what we do. So during this week, we don't just think of, now we're putting away unleavened bread. We're thinking of, no, we're now eating. That's why I think it's a good idea, but I'm not going to talk about what's sin and what's not sin and get off into that physical stuff. But as we think about eating that unleavened bread, we're thinking about, am I putting on, is this, and not putting on as the world would say it, am I taking this? Is my life becoming more one of sincerity and of truth? And those are the course corrections that you and I make individually throughout the entire year, and only you and I can do it by taking a look at that mirror and not just before Passover. We go on from this day symbolically doing the same thing. It doesn't stop here. You think tomorrow we don't have to take on sincerity and truth? That doesn't change. The foot washing attitude doesn't change. The recollection of Christ's sacrifice doesn't change, because when you get on your knees tomorrow or the next day, you're still appealing for that same sacrifice to cover your sins. When you're anointed, you're still accounting on that broken body to heal you. The significance of that, it doesn't change. We now take of the symbolism, the bread and the wine, as a memorial of that event. It will never, that physical death will never happen again. As Paul pointed out, here's the one that mentioned and talked about this whole symbolism in 1 Corinthians. Now let's go to Hebrews chapter 7. Hebrews 7 and verse 24. Here's Paul says, talked about our high priest. This man, because he continues forever, has an unchangeable priesthood. Wherefore he is able to save them to the uttermost that come to God through him. Speaking of the Father. See, it's so interesting. When we read that, I know who he's talking about, and so do you, because we understand the relationship between God the Father, and we don't get the Holy Spirit as a person mixed in with all this. See, another great blessing that we have that God's given to us is understanding. It's very simple, but it helps us to put all the scriptures together appropriately, so when you read this, you know what he's talking about. We come to God the Father through him, seeing he lives to make intercession for them. So we've got an intercessor. That's why we pray, and people ask, again, getting off onto these jaunts, is it okay to pray to Jesus Christ? Christ said, pray to my Father. That's who I'm going to pray to. But is it okay? If you want to pray to Jesus Christ, pray to Jesus Christ. But I'm telling you, he gave the instruction to pray to his Father. Can you say, thank you, Jesus Christ? Yes, you can. But every time you pray to the Father, you're acknowledging Jesus Christ, because you pray in his name. So he said, if you want something done, go to the top guy. He's the one. He acknowledged that. That's okay. You're not disavowing that. We pray to the Father through Jesus Christ. That was the example that he gave. So that's the one I'm going to follow. And if he questions me as to why I circumcised my sons, because that came up as a question, I know I didn't have to do it under a covenant, but I thought in looking and doing all the research because of the physical things, good things that come with it, and if you know, I come before the Father and he goes, by the way, why'd you circumcise your kids? Oh, because Jesus was? Good job. You followed the example. See, if you follow the example of Jesus Christ, you really can't lose, can you? He's the one that did it perfectly. For such a priest, verse 26, who is holy, harmless, undefiled, separate from sinners, and made higher than the heavens, who needs not daily, as those high priests, to offer up sacrifice first for his own sins, and then for the people's, for this he did once when he offered up himself. What other big changes have we seen? The church no longer employs the administration of death. Even though I threatened my kids with the Old Testament injunction, I said, by the way, you keep acting this way, in the Old Testament, they'd take you out and stone you. Really? Yep. We don't do that today, but there's other things I can employ. In the New Testament, they still felt justified in putting their own to death. So they even plotted Paul, and they plotted Jesus Christ. Talk about hypocrisy. These are ones that were supposed to stand by the law, and Christ had called them out. He called them a bunch of hypocrites. That's why he says, don't be hypocrites. Exemplify God's truth. Be what you say who you are. These are those, God said about in Revelation, are those that get it, the ones that live according to the testimony, that acknowledge the sacrifice, but of their testimony. By the way that you live, you acknowledge that you are a part of this and have not loved their lives to the death. I feel that's the one where we're at, that through God's Spirit has given us the ability to be able to do this. We just have to stop and think about how that applies to our life. So the plotting trial and death of Jesus Christ was absolutely unconstitutional. The plotting of the death of Paul and the other apostles was also unlawful. The church no longer recognizes the need for circumcision as a requirement to be a part of the church. If you don't think that was a big change, please take a look at Acts 15. It wasn't until some years ago, 10, 15 years ago, that I realized, wow, I didn't realize that there were arguments in the church. Hello? Welcome to the modern day times. There have always been disputes, haven't there? And continue. Don't be surprised. There are disputes, and they all handle them in different ways. Do you think that they left that conference and everything was wrapped up and fine? No way. No chance. There were those that saw it. I can see this. Now, don't forget this had been done for thousands of years. And now you're going to say this is not requirement? There are those that got it. There are those that probably were like, you know, I see what he's saying, but I'm just not totally sure. And there are those that entirely rejected it because the disciples had to go out and help all the other churches because they were making it a physical thing to say, no, you still got to do this. The physical things were still a part of that. They're saying it wasn't. That was a huge change. And it caused, it says, with much disputing. And many of us didn't see that until in our day and age, we've had much disputing. And everybody handles it differently. And we're all accountable to God individually for how we respond and handle these things. What big changes can we expect in the future? Remember I said the third point was expect big changes. This is the last part here. What big changes? Expect this. A hierarchy. You know, a lot of people have been turned off to a term called hierarchy. There's going to be a spiritual hierarchy. God the Father, Jesus Christ, and then his ruling structure. All there, not for personal gain, but to serve, to administrate justice and righteous judgment throughout the entire universe. You can see again, David is king. That's hierarchy. Over Israel, you can see the apostles, one over each tribe. Where will Abraham be? Where will Moses be? God's got those positions. And those for the rest of those first fruits who he has called for a purpose. You'll see the end of political rambling. Yes. No more commercials. No more of this. No more. Look at all the expense and millions of dollars spent on political rambling. And the waste. Done. Gone. A pure language. The end of my puns. Will I still be able to pun off a pure language? You know, we can use words for puns, can't we? The play on words. I'm going to France this year. I won't be able to do puns there. When you translate them, they're just not the same. But a pure language. What did he say? What did he mean by that? Well, here's what I meant by that. That'll be interesting, won't it? Pure language. Bodies composed of spirit. Bodies composed of spirit. No more pain. It says no more crying, just joy, and all the other good things that will be there as well. So hard to identify with spiritual bodies, and yet we know the manifestation of physical can still be there because you wonder, will you have the same smells? Well, it talks about in Revelation, the prayers of the saints, incense. God smells we're created in his image. He's got a nose. If he's got a nose, he uses it. This whole thing about the image thing. If Moses saw the spiritual element of God in his glory, but only could see it as he was, the hand blocked him, and he saw hind parts, which told me he's got top parts, front parts, and bottom parts, and he sits on a throne, that we can't totally identify with a spiritual essence, but we do know that spirit beings can eat. I like eating. Most of us do. Taste. All those wonderful things that we experience in physical will be magnified even more. Because that's God. Everything he's done, if he's given us that great of a taste of something that's so special, how much more will it be when they're spirit beings? We're going to see a lot bigger things. And we get the reflection and taste of that right now. Matthew chapter 26, we'll finish here. Because it's something that's pointed out after he does the communion, the new symbols. This one we don't normally read. But it's something, once again, whenever he does something, and you see the prophecies and the things that are talked about in Israel, and he goes through what's going to take place, what's going to transpire, what it's all about, and then he usually gives a presentation of the future, because this is what it's all about. What it's going to be like. See, the Passover for us in these days, in a way, reflect on something that's already been done. We take the Passover as a memorial. The wave sheaf has already been done. That's been accomplished. That was fulfilled. Christ was presented before his Father. The first fruits will be presented before the Father. The rest of the first fruits. He was the first of them. The timing and all that, God's got that under total control. But that's not yet happened. This has been done when we do it as a memorial. Can you imagine? I don't see why this would be done away with when we see God, because he gives us a little picture here in verse 29 of Matthew 26. He says, I say to you that I will not drink henceforth of the fruit of this vine. It shows that he's going to drink it again. And I venture to say, because we'll go out and try to identify and get kind of a nice, a good bottle of wine, not a $200 bottle, but a good bottle of wine for the Passover. It's just so hard to find, to pick out a really good one, because man makes it. And it's normally processed like man makes it. I do know this from the scriptures, from the identity of the scriptures. Whatever wine that God makes, whoa, I cannot wait to taste that wine. They had a taste of it at that first miracle that he did, because somebody blew it by saying, why did you save the best wine for last? That was the stuff that Christ made. Can you imagine? Somebody tasted that and go, whoa, why'd you save this stuff for the last? That same wine. Maybe you and I will sit at that table. That's what it says. I will not drink henceforth of the fruit of this vine until the day when I drink it new with you in my Father's kingdom. Can you see that? I try to see it. I try to share that with others. I really do. Because when you see what we have, as blessed as we are in this country today, when I bite into an apple or an avocado, and it's okay. But, you know, I don't know what it's been sprayed with. I know it probably doesn't taste the way a real good apple would taste, or a grapefruit, or something else. And we'll be able to sit there, and whatever is presented for us, maybe he's talking about the marriage supper? I'm not sure. But could you imagine when we come before him, and maybe gives us those symbols again, as a reminder and as a memorial? And we'll look back and go, I remember that. Maybe you'll remember and say, I remember that time when he talked about the time in the future because of the way that time goes by so fast. And I'm reminded of that when my daughter turns 27 or my son turns 30 or I turn 59. What in the world happened to that? And you and I in the future will look back and go, this was all worth it. Christ will also say, you are they that continue with me in my trials, and now you got here. Welcome to my Father's kingdom. See, this journey that we're on is not reflective of those murmuring, disputing, griping Israelites. That's what we're learning to come out of. To take on this last day of unleavened bread, to really think and stop and pause. Think about why we're doing what we're doing. And think about the greatest things that are yet lying ahead for us. What a wonderful plan of salvation. Have a wonderful last day of unleavened bread.